Carla, good morning.
Good morning, Nathaniel.
So, Carla, how did you go about collecting the information you needed to create this database?
We read a lot of coronial reports. We wrote to states and territories to ask for their up-to-date figures on deaths in custody. A lot of them weren't able to provide us those figures, but we used that as a bit of a guideline to make sure that we knew how many reports we should be looking for. And then we just went through the team of us, including two SERs, Miles Herbert, Lorena Allam, our Indigenous Affairs Editor, Jack Bannister and Nick Evershed, and we read every coronial file that we could find that fell within the period of time we were looking for.
What kind of challenges did you face in getting access to the data required for the investigation?
Coronial files are publicly available, but there's kind of it drops off at two ends of the period. So we looked at every Indigenous death in custody going back to the 1st of January 2008. Deaths that have occurred in the past few years, it was sometimes difficult to find information for because there's a pretty long delay normally between someone dying and the coroner's file being produced. In places like Western Australia and South Australia, it's almost 3 years. So for those more recent deaths, we were relying on media reports or press statements we had. One of the reasons there's a few more West Australian reports of more recent deaths than in other states is because I have a reporting focus on that state, and I happen to have more information about that state, more press releases to confirm more recent deaths. And at the other end of the spectrum, most cases where the coronial report had been filed earlier to 2012, in a lot of states, particularly New South Wales, it's really difficult to find any information. So we were making a lot of requests to see full copies of inquests if we could, just so we could actually provide as accurate a picture as possible of the past 10 years.
Right. And with these data you did get, were there any concerning trends that you found as you carried out this investigation?
Yeah, look, there were a few trends that we identified through checking across multiple different data points. One of the things we decided that we would check off on every inquest that we read was whether the coroner or an expert medical witness noted that the person should have received additional medical care. They may have received some medical care, but there was some additional medical care that they should have received but was not given to them. And we also did 5 years' worth of non-Indigenous deaths from 2010 to 2015 so we could do a comparative analysis. And we learnt that in 34% of cases where an Indigenous person died, the coroner found that there was additional medical care that they should have received, they didn't get. And for non-Indigenous people, that was only 21%. We also found that procedures were followed in less cases where an Indigenous person had died in custody than where a non-Indigenous person had died in custody. Those procedures could be quite things that seem quite minor, things like whether or not cell checks were performed at exactly the intervals that they were meant to be performed and whether or not the performance of those cell checks was recorded in custody logs, in police watch houses or in prison stations. But sometimes the procedures were quite egregious breaches. One example would be the case of the death in custody of Miss Dew, where one of the procedures breached in that case was that she was dragged from her cell rather than being lifted onto a gurney, which is against police procedures. So there's sort of a range of procedures not being followed, but it was much more common in Indigenous death in custody than non-Indigenous death in custody.
Gosh, my goodness. If you've just joined us here on The Daily, we're speaking with Guardian reporter Carla Walquist, who was involved in the Deaths Inside project that's just released a database of Indigenous deaths in custody. Now, Carla, the database includes all Indigenous deaths said to have occurred in the presence of the police, including deaths from self-inflicted injuries. Politicians and Indigenous groups around the country have called for reform following the release of this information. How has the reaction to the investigation been what you and the other journalists were expecting?
Look, we did receive a really, really strong reaction from readers and from the legal sector and from particularly from the Indigenous community, which is really heartening to see. this kind of work is something that has been discussed, certainly as long as I've been reporting on Indigenous affairs. I've been having conversations with people about the need for this kind of database. So I think it's just that it takes so many resources to pull it together. And we were lucky in that we had an editor who allowed us the time to do this work. But so it was interesting to see the number of responses that we received saying, look, yeah, this really is work that needed to be done. It's probably work that should have been done by a government agency, but it's really great that someone has put the work out there. The government responses that we've received have been interesting as well. We're sort of focusing as a call to action on the need to implement a custody notification service, which is one of the key recommendations of the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody in 1991. Only New South Wales at this stage has a mandatory legislated custody notification service, which means that any Indigenous person who was taken into police custody for any reason, be it protective custody, be it a criminal charge, in New South Wales or the ACT, police are required to contact the Aboriginal Legal Service as soon as possible, and the Aboriginal Legal Service can provide legal advice and also do a welfare check on that person. And that's been in place in New South Wales since 2000. In 2016, Nigel Scullion, Federal Indigenous Affairs Minister, promised 3 years' worth of funding to any state that introduced legislation establishing a mandatory scheme along the New South Wales model. So far, only the Northern Territory and Western Australia have taken him up on that, but neither of them have actually got to the point of being able to introduce the legislation. So one of the things we're hoping to do with this project is really say, look, this is quite a sort of simple legislative step that can be taken, and it's one that really should be taken, because the fact that we've had, you know, at least 407 Indigenous people die in custody, that we know of since the Royal Commission 27 years ago, I mean, that's just not an acceptable figure.
Well, what are your hopes for how this database will be used going forward?
We intend to continue updating this database. We've received a number of contacts from family members since we posted it yesterday, and we'll be updating it with the deaths of other people that we were not aware of. We do know that there will be other people that we're not aware of. We don't think 147 is the total figure of Indigenous people who've died since the 1st of January 2008. We know there are more. And so we will be updating that figure as we can, and we will also be updating it as it goes forward. We'll continue to maintain this database and sort of keep it as a real-time resource.
Right. Well, wish you all the best with your database work. Kayla, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.